Chapter 24. The fall was a brief one, but long enough for Miller to regret nearly everything he could think of. All he'd said, done, and especially not done in the last few weeks. But before he could really wallow in the dreadful guilt, they fell out of darkness and into a dim light. Miller just had time to recognize the submarine unloading docks a few hundred yards away, and then the water closed over their heads. Somehow, he held on to Mara, and as they plummeted down into the chilly water, he felt her arch her back and buck several times. She had obviously regained consciousness, but too late to keep from inhaling water. Miller tried to slow them, and she waved her arms feebly, and soon he was kicking hard for the surface, his lungs bursting, and Mara's movement slowing to almost nothing. But after he broke the surface and gasped in a lungful of sweet air, he managed to squeeze an explosive cough out of her, then another, and soon she was gasping for air too, as he held her head above the water. When she'd recovered a bit, he helped her out of her heavy druid robes. They would quickly pull her under if she tried to swim in them. Underneath the robes, Mara was wearing a simple wool shift, plaid and a bit worn. Without the robes, Miller was surprised at how young and slender she looked. He looked around for a way out of the water. It was cold enough for hypothermia to hit them both within a matter of 10 or 15 minutes. But the chamber looked featureless, except for the docks. And as he began to swim toward them, motioning to Mara to follow, he saw the guards beating a slave, and he remembered what he had seen before. A body falling into the water and disappearing instantly, yanked under by something huge and hungry. And whatever it was in this water. Miller stopped swimming so abruptly that Mara ran into him. She spluttered and said something indignant in a questioning voice. He pointed ahead to the docks. Mara nodded. Miller made a shark mouth with his hands and growled as he mimed something big chomping down. Mara smiled. He shook his head.
"No, damn it. It's not funny," he told her. "There's a thing in the water. Maybe more than one."
He repeated his chomping gesture.
"It'll get us, Mara. If we swim over there, it'll get us."
Mara smiled again. This time she added something that sounded reassuring and began to swim toward the dock again.
"Hey,"
Miller called after her.
"Damn it, it's dangerous."
But she kept swimming, and eventually Miller swore and went after her. He was a good, strong swimmer, and in spite of her lead, he caught up with her after she'd only covered about a third of the distance to the docks.
"Mara,"
he gasped out, reaching out a hand and placing it on her shoulder. She turned and looked at him, an eyebrow raised.
"Damn it, girl,"
Miller said.
"That thing will get you."
She smiled and shook her head. She said something that sounded like it was supposed to be reassuring. In short, she wasn't worried about any mean old monster. And to make it absolutely clear to an increasingly frustrated Miller, she held up a necklace she was wearing around her neck, as opposed to a necklace you'd wear somewhere else. It had been hidden by the robes, but with them off, it hung down across her collarbones. It was very pretty. Some beads hung on a leather thong, and a large pendant of intricately worked silver hanging at the center.
"An amulet,"
Miller said.
"You're not worried about being eaten by a sea monster because you're wearing an amulet."
She nodded her head and resumed swimming.
"Come back, damn it! That's just primitive superstition! You'll be eaten alive!"
She wasn't listening, and the gap of black water between them grew larger. Miller took off after her.
"Damn it, Mara!"
he gasped. She was about 15 feet ahead of him because of her head start. He was closing the gap easily, gaining on her, when he saw it. Cutting through the water, headed straight for Mara, was a very large dorsal fin.
"Mara!"
he bellowed, surging forward to try and stop her. Why? He couldn't say. The thing must be so large, judging from the fin, that both of them would be no more than a light snack for it. Mara had stopped swimming. She'd seen it at last, and was treading water, looking at it.
Now we'll see how good that amulet is,
Miller thought. He caught up with her, but she put an arm out, holding him back. And before he could protest, she had kicked forward to meet the thing.
Oh, God, no,
Miller moaned, waiting in agony to hear the strangled gasp as the thing sank its enormous teeth into her and pulled her down to see the vicious swirl of water, the bloody whirlpool surging up around the spot where she'd been, and then the fin coming up again, circling, heading for him. He watched Mara, knowing there was nothing he could do to prevent the huge creature from cutting her in half and dragging her under. She held out a hand, not as if she were trying to stop the thing, Miller realized, but as if she was welcoming it. Which she was. The fin slowed, paused, circled her once. Directly under him, Miller could see a huge shadow that seemed to go on forever. Or, as the text of this book says, seemed to go one forever. Anyway, it bumped against him, but did him no harm. Instead, the huge head broke water. That's not the phrase you want to use. Instead, the huge head broke water beside Mara, and it was worse than Miller had imagined. The head was the size and roughly the shape of a killer whale's, but the teeth were taken from a shark out of a nightmare. Three rows were visible, and in each row, hundreds of large, sharp-looking teeth jutted out. As Miller watched in horror, the jaw opened, leaned in toward Mara, and made a sound somewhere between a sigh and a giggle. But then, while Miller was still trying to convince himself he had actually seen it, the thing leaned its head closer and nudged Mara affectionately. She laughed aloud and stroked its nose, and it absolutely cooed at her. After a moment of mutual affection, Mara beckoned to Miller, still expecting the creature to snap her up and gobble her down at any second. He approached. The monster looked at him warily out of one eye, but Mara spoke to it firmly, and it left Miller alone. Miller came close and, treading water, just looked at the two of them.
What the hell did you do?
He finally asked Mara. She laughed again and held up her amulet. She spoke, telling Miller the Celtic equivalent of, I told you so, and stroked the monster's nose again.
All right,
Miller said, shaking his head.
Chalk one up for primitive superstition.
He looked at the creature as carefully as he could without getting too close. Either it was some new mutant form of sea life that had arisen out of his own time, or it was a deliberate genetic experiment. But it was clearly not a natural offshoot of anything he knew about. Along its back, it had a dorsal hole for breathing, but the teeth were unlike anything a true cetacean had ever had. And the behavior it displayed toward Mara was affectionate, intelligent, very similar to the way he knew dolphins and killer whales often behaved. But the jaw, especially the teeth, and the dorsal fin, were pure shark. The tail looked like it had been removed from a thresher shark and grafted on. It was a large, powerful, fierce-looking animal. And whatever it was, Mara had it eating out of her hand. They made the dock easily, the sea creature swimming beside Mara and demanding occasional pats on the snout. Miller pulled himself up out of the water and held a hand down for Mara, who gave the monster a final petting and a kiss below the eye. It was so pleased that it tail-walked briefly before disappearing into the depths once again. Miller pulled Mara up onto the docks. He turned around, still holding onto her hand, and stopped short. Every guard on the dock was staring at them. standing in a half circle around them. The slaves, too, had stopped their work to watch. There was a complete, motionless silence throughout the busy unloading area. Miller realized this was going to call for a spectacular bluff. He cleared his throat and stepped forward.
"Ahem," he said, "by the order of Osiris."
He stopped speaking. It wasn't necessary. As he stepped toward them, the guards had all stepped back. He reached back for Mara's hand and led her toward the row of waiting subs. As they passed through the line of guards, the guards almost tripped over themselves in their effort to stay out of Miller's way. And more particularly, Miller realized, out of Mara's way.
"Of course,"
he realized.
"They saw her with the monster. They must think she's some kind of god, too, like Osiris."
Miller had never been able to lie convincingly. He was, for example, a lousy poker player. He just couldn't bring himself to fib well enough to bluff convincingly. But he was learning. If nothing else, this trip was teaching him to see an advantage and do whatever it took to push it. And so, holding Mara's hand firmly, I think maybe for the 8th or 9th time in this single chapter, he walked right up to the guard closest to the line of mini-subs.
"We need a sub,"
he said.
"Which one is ready to go?"
The guard stared at him and blinked stupidly.
"Come on,"
Miller said.
"I'm in a hurry. Which one?"
The guard licked his lips. Sweat was beading on his forehead.
I'm like, you know, not actually supposed to..."
"Can you swim?"
Miller asked him.
"This one over here is good,"
the guard said, pointing toward a sub slightly larger than the others.
"A new model? Roomier? A little faster, maybe?"
"That'll be fine,"
Miller said, leading Mara toward the open hatch. They were inside quickly. The hatch was easy enough to dog down. It worked with a large wheel, exactly the way hatches had always closed in every submarine movie Miller had ever seen. And there was no question about where the control room was either. It sat on top, up front, in a glass dome that was streamlined into the body of the sub and wrapped around to give a 180-degree view. Miller settled into the pilot's chair and breathed a sigh of relief. There were no surprises at the controls. There was a simple joystick planted in front of his seat, and 3 rows of toggle switches, each with a very clear picture symbol underneath to indicate what they were for. Miller got the engine running easily and motioned Mara to another seat in front of what seemed to be the navigation communications panel.
"Sit here,"
he told her. She was still looking around the room and out the window, wide-eyed, but she sat gingerly as if the chair might break under her. Miller showed her the seatbelt harness.
"This strap goes across like this,"
he said, demonstrating.
"It snaps in here."
He secured her in place. She didn't object. He snapped himself in then, rubbed his hands together, and pushed the throttle forward. The pitch of the engine moved up from rumble to roar. He eased back slightly and pushed the stick forward. Nothing happened. Frowning, he pulled the stick back toward his seat, trying to move in the other direction. The sub lurched slightly, but stayed in the same place. Miller looked out the dome, craning his neck to see around the sub and determine why they weren't moving. It was clear in one quick glance.
"Oh,"
he said.
"The ropes."
He unbuckled from his seat.
"Stay here,"
he said to Mara.
"I'll be right back."
Miller opened the hatch and looked out. The guards were still staring, perhaps wondering why a deity would forget something as basic as untying the mooring lines.
"You there!"
he called, pointing to the guard who had shown them to the sub. The man lurched to attention.
"You are supposed to untie us!"
The guard opened his mouth, but nothing came out. He looked around for help, but all the others were moving away from him.
"Well,"
Miller said.
Sorry,
the guard said. But he made no move to grab the mooring lines.
Well, untie us,
Miller commanded, pointing to the thick ropes.
Right,
the guard said, falling forward onto the lines as if he'd been stung. Miller watched to make sure the guard was actually untying them, and when he was reassured, he ducked back into the sub. But as he started to pull the hatch closed, he heard a commotion at the far end of the docks, down by the water tunnel station, and looked back out. The doors to the lift were open, and a line of 20-some guards was double-timing out onto the dock, moving toward them. And behind them, striding out of the elevator and looking straight at Miller, came Osiris.
Quickly, man!
Miller called to the guard. He was bent over a cleat, and unaware of his master's approach. And as he fumbled off the last line, Miller slammed and dogged the hatch and raced back to the controls. Mara looked up at him questioningly as he dove for the joystick, not bothering to strap himself in.
Osiris,
he told her.
He's here.
She nodded and gripped to the armrests, and Miller pushed the joystick forward. The sub began to move. He looked out the window. The nearest guards were about 20 feet away. Miller pushed the stick forward to move away faster and clear the dock as the first two guards arrived. The man who had untied them was standing on the edge of the dock. He waved as he saw Miller look at him. Miller waved back, just as the arriving royal guards shoved the man into the water. There was a familiar swirl and splash in the water, and the helpful guard disappeared beneath the surface. Miller looked away and accelerated slightly. The casual brutality of the guard's murder sickened him. It was tough to feel bad about the death of a man who was basically a death camp guard, but he had spoken with the man, and there was a human bond between them, however slight. But there were other problems now, and they were more pressing. Now that they were away from the docks, where did they go next? There was what looked like a viewing screen set in the control panel in front of Miller. Under it was a knot of four arrows, pointing at the four cardinal points of the compass. A toggle switch was set in the middle of the arrows, and another switch was beside the screen, with a blue dot at one end and a red dot at the other. Miller frowned, then flipped the switch beside the screen.
This has to be it,
he muttered. The screen came to life. It showed the water straight ahead of them. The picture was video, but computer enhanced. It had no fuzziness of detail, as a plain camera shot would have. Instead, the farthest point in sight ahead of them was crystal clear, every line and shadow as cleanly visible as if it was on the panel in front of him.
Wow,
he said, impressed with the technology in spite of himself.
Now, if it will only tell us how to get out of here.
Miller turned the sub slowly to the left. A small ping sounded, and a red arrow flashed at a point on the screen.
Bingo,
he said. He aimed the boat at the arrow.
Home free.
Millar,
Mara said. He looked at her. She had been gazing out the dome, and now pointed back toward the dock. He craned his neck to see. Behind them, Osiris stood in the middle of the deck, one arm on his hip and the other arm outstretched, pointing at them. His beak was open as if he was speaking. And all around him, at the ships where the other submarines were moored, there was movement. 10 of the slips were now empty. The subs had pulled out and begun to move, coming after them. End of chapter.